So I guess if they weren't siphoning off all this money, Catherine, Social Security would be in pretty good shape, wouldn't it?
It would certainly be in much better shape.
Man, let me tell you something. Would you...
I was so happy to hear your numbers about the New York Times.
Yeah.
That's why I'm an optimist. I mean, I have to tell you, I think the American people are the most generous, decent, wonderful people in the world. And the fact that they're voting with their money and their time for you and not the New York Times is enormously makes me feel much better.
There's hope, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely, there's hope.
Do you think that Europeans would like to see our system of government, the one we perceive, to totally collapse?
Oh, not at all.
Really?
Not at all. In the last 2 years, I've been in London, I've been in Sweden, I've been, it's phenomenal how popular America and the notion of American democracy and sort of a country where the little guy has a chance, how popular that is with most Europeans. I'm always amazed. And they have a marvelous, sort of feeling about the American people and the American opportunity. And I think seeing America go the way it's going is not what they want at all. Now, I think there's a lot of European investment that has traditionally, been at odds with sort of American political interest, or local self-sufficiency.
But, I don't want you to rule out the globalists, because I do believe that they have a bigger plan for some kind of global government.
Oh, I agree with you. I think that's true.
Let's go to the calls. True. You ready?
Oh, absolutely. Let's go.
Here they come. Let's go to our wild card line. First of all, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Queens, New York.
Well, welcome to the show.
Catherine and George, I have the holy grail of what you're looking for.
What do you have?
I have worked 4 years now with the 911 families, and we did tireless hundreds and hundreds of hours of research. What came up, and George, you're not going to be too happy with this. Admiral Fry, who is in the United States Navy, changed the directive June 1st, 2001, and it's on their website, that only Donald Rumsfeld could give orders to the commanders to respond in 9/11. Also, all along, they have denied that they were wargaming that.
Well, hold on. He did that on June 1st, 2001?
June 1st, 2001. Also, NORAD.
Well, wait a minute. No, let me ask you something.
Go ahead.
He did not put into that directive any wording about 9/11, did he?
He did not say it, but he said, this is what he said, quote, in case of a hijacking, all commanders are stripped of the responsibility to proceed without the consent of Donald Rumsfeld first. The same day, June 1st, okay, NORAD had on their magazine four planes with bin Laden in the middle. So this was well planned beforehand. When I went to the 911 hearing in New York, the Port Authority and Giuliani confirmed that they were briefed July 1st with FEMA that there was going to be an attack on the Pentagon. Also, I met Mike Rubit and Representative Cynthia McClinley at another hearing where they were told that Dick Cheney was working with PTEC. This is very, very important. You could confirm this with Mike Rupert, that PTEC had changed the software where that day the air traffic controller saw 22 false positives, and they didn't know whether it was real or not. Now, all along, the White House has denied that there was any war game until March 23rd, 2005, where Cynthia McClinley confronted Donald Rumsfeld and Myers and said, I want to know, were you war gaming that day? And they looked at each other and they said, we have to tell the truth. And they said, yes, we were war gaming five games. We were in control of this.
Yeah, that is true.
All right. Now, also, Senator Grassley called. I wrote a letter. And I have
okay,
to
well, did you have a question, though? Because we've got so many people calling.
What's your point? To you, this goes right into the White House. When I gave Tim Romer, I want to know when you give this information out that this was an inside job about, and like Catherine said, the most important thing is why the Air Force fell. Does this information help out? Because I could email her this.
Do you want this information, Catherine?
I have it. I think it's very useful and important information. I appreciate it.
Okay,
your
great.
Call very
Thanks.
Much.
Appreciate your call, Arlene. Next up, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there. Hello.
Yes, this is Chad.
Hi, Chad. Go ahead.
This is Chad. I wanted to answer a question of who these people might be, and I think it traces back to some of the original power families that come out of Europe, such as the Astors, the Bundys, Collins family, the DuPont family, the Freemans, even some contingencies in the Kennedys. In China, you have the Li family, L-I. You have the Onassis family, the Rothschilds, the Russell family, Rockefellers, the Merovingian family, and the Van Dynes. And if you trace everything back, and there's a significant connection to the Federal Reserve and how the money moves, you'll still find a lot of the money power structure is still being run the way it used to be centuries ago, perhaps even thousands of years ago, by these people, these contingencies who believe that they have divine right.
Well, these are the globalists.
Exactly.
The Illuminati.
Exactly. And I believe there's concentric circles of these globalists, whether it's Council on Foreign Relations, the CFR, the Trilateral Commission, Skull and Bones, contingencies within the Vatican, within the intelligence community. I've been told by my friends in the intelligence community that the CIA has tremendous overlap with Israeli Mossad, British Secret Service, Russian intelligence. Wherever you find money and power, I think you'll agree that there's tremendous corruption.
Well, first of all, though, I think the intelligence worldwide needs to be intertwined, so I don't think there's anything unusual about that. The bigger thrust of the story is, who would these people be? Who is the Illuminati? What do they want? What do they want to attain? I think the bottom line here, Catherine, is, and you haven't touched on this yet, but when it all has to do with money and control, I also think it's population control. You know, as you read 6 billion people on this planet, and you know, we all read the same things where they think our resources are dwindling. I'm not necessarily sure that's the case, but that's what they say. Then you would think that their agenda would be to preserve this planet for themselves and their 500 million, 500 million other friends. Very possible.
Well, there's algebraically, we tried to simulate the economy when I was doing the software development that I described, and what we came up with was essentially, you know, if we kept on the current trajectory, we'd have to depopulate by a significant amount, or we could do what I call the Solari model, which is re-engineer to a much more productive economy and a much more lawful economy. I mean, you can't stand this kind of corruption and environmental destruction. So, I mean, there is a way the population, I believe, can support the current population, you know, in a state of with no poverty. I mean, we have the economic and technological basis to have a wonderful life with no poverty, but that's a significant political change. And the question is it possible and how can you do it?
And do they really want to?
Yeah, I think it's a bigger, week, because you're talking about a significant spiritual change. We are going through a process where we have amazing technology, and you know what's coming out of the black budget is just amazing technology, but we don't have a culture which can, you know, it's a little bit like giving laser guns to the Neanderthal men.
Yeah.
So we don't have a culture that is intellectually and spiritually evolved and socially evolved to handle this kind of powerful technology.
Next up, let's go to our first time caller line. Welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Where are you calling from?
This is Roy from Harrisburg, PA.
Okay, Roy. It's all yours.
Well, I'm on the road, so I didn't catch what Catherine's background is.
Well, I grew up in Philly.
there you go.
I grew up on the streets of Philadelphia, and my neighborhood was destroyed by HUD fraud and drugs, which is how I got interested in all of this. But I grew up in Philly. I went to the University of Pennsylvania, studied in Hong Kong, and then went to Wall Street. Had a successful career on Wall Street, lived in New York, and then went to Washington to be assistant secretary. And then 4 years ago, when I was the enemy of state, went on the road living in four places on an unpredictable schedule, but settled in Hickory Valley, Tennessee, which is where I now live. But I'm a Philly girl, and I used to be financial advisor to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, so I've been to Harrisburg many times.
Okay. Actually, I was born near Philly, too.
Oh, really?
The question I have is, with all this corruption, I was wondering how much you, and it's been a known fact that money has been taken from Social Security, how much corruption do you think there is in the Social Security money? And then
I don't think there is any money in the Social Security fund. I think there's just a bunch of security saying I owe you from the Treasury. I think the plan to privatize Social Security is one of the most frightening, dangerous things I've ever seen, because if you think they can, if you think they can lower their cost of capital to the inside players through the kind of mechanisms we've been talking about now, when they can overtly borrow money with the U.S. Treasury securities and use it to, fuel the stock market through Social Security, that's when the inside players just literally blow the rest of small business away. So I think privatization of Social Security as it's being planned is the death of small business remaining in this country.
Well, I agree 100%, and one of the things that I think that's going to happen, and you were saying there's hope, I don't believe in hope.
I do.
I think they won and we lost, because what they did was they brought us into the circle. There are more and more people who are invested financially into this corporate menagerie, and we're stuck. We can't get out. And this whole privatization of Social Security will just be one more notch that they can add to it.
Well, I do think we can get out, because if you study what's happening, this centralization is destroying wealth. And in fact, a decentralizing process, which this technology is natural to do, creates far more wealth. So it's very possible that what I call the pro-centralization team can create far more wealth than the pro-centralization team, and in that lies tremendous hope. One of the things I really hope to communicate tonight is so much money is being wasted in the current system that there is a possibility to unleash tremendous wealth by turning this around. You can turn the red button green, but
back
you can't
off the
do
old
it
phone.
To face things.
All right, back off the old phone again. What kind of phone are you using, by the way?
Pardon me?
What kind of phone are you using?
It's a GE Pro Series business telephone.
I'm going to have to write a little note to GE. I'll take care of that. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
George, I wanted to ask you two questions. Or shall I say, I want to ask Catherine two questions.
Sure.
This is Michael from Orlando, Florida, by the way.
Hi, Michael.
Hi. I want to ask the question about the Bush-Clinton crime family, particularly as it alluded to drug smuggling. You talked about that a little bit, but then you backed away from it. Could you tell me a little more about that?
Yeah, what I've tried to understand and study is the traffic patterns in MENA, Arkansas, as a way of kind of getting a sense of what happened during Iran-Contra.
Right.
And if you're interested in that, I'd really recommend you read Sam Smith's Progressive Review and Mike Rupert's website.
Oh, yeah, it's on Michael Rupert's website, and it's on Stuart Webb's website. Stuart Webb talks about there being a DEA videotape of George and Jeb Bush flying drugs in from Miami.
I've never seen it.
Yeah.
I've never seen it. But
yeah, that's on the
but
Stuart
I
Webb
drove,
website.
I finally drove over to MENA, over to Arkansas and met with Mark Swaney, who did a lot of the research on the money laundering through the HUD agency there. Anyway, so I've read a lot and studied a lot and am persuaded that there was a significant arms narcotics trafficking operation that had the political involvement of both sides. Now, it depends on who you read and what you say to guess what's true, but it's clear that there is, significant narcotics trafficking in this country. It can't possibly work at this level without tremendous, political support at a governmental level.
But there have never been any charges leveled against any of these individuals he just mentioned.
Correct. Absolutely. I mean, there's simply been books and stories and, various allegations.
Alan, allegations, aren't enough foundation. Next up, Wildcard Line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, man. My name's Danny. I'm calling from Richmond, Virginia.
Hi, Danny.
Yeah, I was going to call and see if she, Catherine could give me any advice on property taxes.
Uh-huh.
How so?
All right, in 2003, our property tax went from 52 cents per every $100 of value. And this in 2004, we didn't even see. We had no notices of it being increased. It went to $1.08. And I was looking into the county papers in the very back, and it shows that we paid $14 million in property taxes in our county, which is a very small suburb county. And we got Richmond City and other counties around us that are paying like 80 cents per $100 of their value. And we're losing funds, we're losing services, business are going out, and drugs are running rampant in our community.
Right. It sounds, I live in Hardeman County, Tennessee. It's the same pattern. My reports that I get from around the country is there are steady increases in property taxes in many places. My recommendation to you, if you have the interest and you have friends or associates who are interested, is if you start to dig in and really study the federal, state, and local resources in your place, you know, if you collect up the budgets and start looking and start asking where money's going, what you will find is that there is significant opportunity to re-engineer how money works to work back to your advantage. And I would really encourage you to do that.
You know, you can appeal if your property taxes go up, but I don't know how many people are successful that way, Catherine.
Well, generally I find if you try and work just within the particular system that you're in by yourself, it won't work. If you dig in, let me give you an example. In 1996, an old partner of mine from Wall Street came down to my company in Washington, and I demoed Community Wizard. And he said to me, well, this is a totally stupid idea. It's totally hopeless. There's nothing you can do. And I said, well, Luis, what neighborhood do you live in? And he said, I live in Bronxville, New York. So I said to somebody, print out our list of all the federal expenditures in Bronxville, New York. And I turned the list over to Luis. And within 2 seconds, he was Cuban. He started screaming in Spanish about all the corruption. And I said, what's the matter? And he says, $4 million in flood insurance. This is so corrupt. I said, well, why is that corrupt? It doesn't sound corrupt to me. And he said, Bronxville's on a hill. There hasn't been a flood in 30 years.
And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest, Catherine Austin Fitz. Her website is solari.com, S-O-L-A-R-I. Remember that old song from a long time ago called Buttons and Bows, Catherine?
No.
It goes, you've heard it. It goes, the rich get rich and the poor get poor. And it goes on and on and on.
Oh, yeah, okay.
All right. How true, huh?
Yes, true. Yes, it's true.
Are they taking advantage of us to do it?
I would say so, yes. I would say so, but the challenge is, why do we let them?
Well, first of all, how many people know that they're even doing it until you start talking about it or programs like this start talking about it?
Right, absolutely. And I think one of the reasons it happens is because we really, I call it the tapeworm. It's like a parasite in our midst. It's an economy where a few inside players can take advantage. And I think one of, tapeworms operate because, one, we don't know we have a tapeworm. We can't see it. Who is it? How does it work? But the other is the way a tapeworm functions in your body is it ejects a chemical into you that makes you crave what the tapeworm wants. And I think if you look at how modern media has been built and developed, we have tremendous programming in our educational systems and in our media that encourage us to want what's good for the tapeworm.
Wildcard Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Where might you be? Hi there.
Well, I'm in Washington, D.C. My name is Tom.
Hi, Tom. Listening to us on WMAL, I take it.
Yes.
Okay. Welcome. Good to have you with us. Are you in the government somewhere?
I used to work with the government, yes, and I've actually had dinner with Catherine at the McLennan Group. I was headed for Iraq, or at least I thought I was, and she strongly advised me against that in telecommunications. And I think that although I wouldn't quite go so far as to say she saved my life, not going to Iraq may well have saved my life. So thank you, Catherine.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Question. Actually, two questions. One is regarding resource scarcities and abundance. But the first question regarding Iraq and regarding what you say you don't know about why oil is higher now than it was before, given that the oil exports from Iraq are less now than they were before the U.S. invasion of Iraq, and given that $10 billion of the $12 billion for reconstruction of the infrastructure of Iraq is unspent at this time, and given that the U.S. viceroy, essentially viceroy for Iraq, Bremer, fired 400,000 Iraqi troops as his first move when he came into office in Iraq, who immediately then became desperate men with guns and no money, do you think that the political and military chaos currently occurring in Iraq is a deliberate policy objective as part of the tapeworm strategy that you so brilliantly outline on your website and in your articles?
Well, it could be. My concern, my biggest concern about Iraq is it's, I think it's very hard to get reliable intelligence on what's really happening.
Well, I got some. Working with the groups that I'm working with, some of which are in government, I get the good stuff out of there from people on the ground, both government and non-government, as well as Dar Jamil and other people who are on the ground over there. And so, you know, if you need to know anything about what's going on there, I may be able to give you what you need.
Here's my concern as to what may be happening. And there's a wonderful book by Sterling and Peggy Seagrave called The Gold Warriors that describes how the booty at the end of World War II in Asia was sort of whacked up among private parties so the taxpayer pays, the citizens in the country die, and then private guys run off with the money. My fear is that the corruption has become so extraordinary that the system is breaking down.
Absolutely.
And it's breaking down in a way that puts our troops at terrible, terrible danger,
and
let alone the harm
too
being done to Iraq. So, you know, my concern is that we're looking at a very inefficient corruption, which makes it that much more dangerous to many,
correct,
many innocent people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right. What was your other question?
The other question is, do you believe that Buckminster Fuller was right about the abundance of resources on the planet, and that scarcities are only contrived to politically manipulate the people of this planet all the way down to the level of the communities that you described?
Well, I'm much more sympathetic to the guys in the top than Bucky Fuller, but Bucky Fuller, he wrote a wonderful book called The Grunch.
Uh-huh.
And he, you know, I read it and I said, why didn't I read this book 10 years earlier? It could have saved me $6 million. But it's quite, you know, Fuller figured out incredible stuff. And I think the question that Fuller brought to the fore is the most important one. How can we create a culture where we think in abundant ways, where I believe that if I help bless you, that will help bless me? You know, how do we come up with a win-win culture? And that's a critical question. Bucky did tremendous work on that.
The opposite of that, though, appears to be the peak oil theory that your friend Mike is putting forward, Mike Rupert's putting forward, and that the supposed scarcity of resources that the recent reports, including the CIA reports, are touting, which I believe and others believe, are being used deliberately and contrived to politically manipulate the people of the United States as well as other nations. What's your call on that?
Well, but I think what Mike is saying is, you know, manipulate, the scarcity may be manipulated, but it's going to be like a train that runs over us either way. So whether it's politically induced or it's resource induced, the average citizen needs to protect themselves from the dynamic.
See, I would believe with Tom, the caller, that a lot of this is induced for,
right,
you know, their own reasons. Let's go to our Tom. Thanks for your call. International Line, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, I'm Denise. I'm calling from Mexico.
Hello, Denise.
Hi, and thank you so much for taking the call, Catherine. And George, I always learn so much on your program. Catherine, this is really playing into a lot of things that I had reason to believe were going on. But I did have a question that bothered me when I first heard about them, and that's about reverse mortgages.
Uh-huh.
And I thought when I heard it that was something that might be used to strip retired for people who were older and had less opportunity to actually continue owning their own property were keeping it, and might be a way for someone else to come in and buy it out from under them.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I think our economy is being run. If you took the, I used to have a member of the Salary Action Network who for the last 4 years took the BEA, Bureau of Economic Analysis Statistics, and his configuration said that the average American household had a deficit. In other words, they spent more in just daily expenses than they had revenues of about $5,000, and they were financing that drain by borrowing more money, you know, particularly against their house. That's what this housing bubble is. It's a famous quote, you know, they've turned our homes into ATM machines. Yeah. And so you'll see a lot of older people borrowing more and more money just to survive and to live. And that's a concern because, oddly enough, the amount of household deficit that we have on average is the same amount, which is going to the government in taxes, that portion that's going to agencies that don't produce audited financial statements. And grossly oversimplifying, we are losing the equity in our homes because our money's going down the black budget. And that's why I think, you know, the question of what is the black budget, you know, how does it work, and how do we do something about it is such an important one, because we're all getting financially drained. You walk around America, everybody's, I haven't been to Mexico for many years, but everybody here is tired. Now, I take that back. I was in Mexico, in Cancun, and 6 months ago. But you know, I think there's a financial drain, and that's turning into sort of a physical and emotional drain, and that's part of what's causing everybody's debt to go up. And the easier it is to borrow money out of our homes, you know, that's helping to facilitate the drain. So I think your concern is a very valid one.
And I do appreciate the fact that not only are you highlighting the troublesome truth, but also are offering some concrete solutions to that, which is always found wanting. A lot of the times we hear about all the problems and the troubles, but never some concrete ideas to how to work with it. With regard to switching to a local bank, does a credit union, would that work as well as a local bank, or is that a totally different type of?
No, a credit union could work well. I think the most important thing that I could communicate is, you know, I kind of believe in the paradigm of the good guys and bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
Where are the best management, you know, where are people of integrity who are competent? If you can find a local financial institution where you have excellent people governing on the board, excellent people managing it, excellent people involved in advisory, you know, because what I call them the community wizards, they're the people who really make things go in a community.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to do is stop backing the people at the top, you know, who are doing, you want to stop backing people who are complicit or allowing criminality or haven't stopped it, and start backing the community wizards. So I would tend to choose not it's a credit union versus a community bank, but where is the local financial institution that really has excellent leadership that you want to support and back.
All right, thanks for that call. West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, my name's John, and I'm from Grants Pass, Oregon.
You know it well, John. Go ahead.
It's a real honor to talk to both of you folks tonight. George, I've been listening for over 15 years, and this has got to be one of the most insightful programs I've ever heard.
Thank you.
I have two quick questions for you, and I'll take the answers off the air. The first one is, if 911 is the end result of a snowball effect, what's next? And then, George, you had a guest on your program talking about the Fed, and basically saying that the dollar is printed and kept in circulation because of the confidence in the dollar, and that there's a fear that China may convert to the euro. And if China does convert to the euro, what does this do to this whole scheme? Thank you much.
And that was Andre Aglesian, who was our guest when he talked about the Federal Reserve. Go ahead, Catherine.
Well, I think if China converts to the euro, the dollar's in for a very bad fall. And right now, the two of the most significant holders are China and Japan. So if we and we see the Chinese currency tied to the U.S. currency. So, for example, if you're shopping at Walmart or a company, you know, some of the big stores, the low prices reflect that tying of the Chinese dollar, and so much of the manufacturing, George, is going on in China. So you delink those two, and you could see not only our revenues and incomes continue to fall, but suddenly our expenses skyrocket.
What if we switch to the euro?
Well, I've just been doing a teleseminar called Investing in Silver and Gold. I mean, there is a global currency. There has been for 2,000 years. It's called silver and gold. And so one of the things I do, I'm a user of digital gold and gold currency systems. And so at the end of the Great Depression, there were 3,000 community currencies in America. And so there's lots of alternatives, whether it's precious metals or community currencies, to start to really get out of the dollar. And I think it's a matter of sound financial practice to start, you know, looking into those and seeing what might work for you. Because, George, let's say you have $1,000 in your checking account on average this year. If the dollar falls a lot, you know, in the last year, you've lost about 30% of your purchasing power just letting it sit in the bank.
30%. Amazing.
Yeah, and if it had sat in silver and gold during that same period, lost that 30%.
No, believe me, I got a client who keeps screaming at me, more gold, more gold. Wildcard Line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, hello. This is Ted calling from Sherman Oaks.
Hi, Ted. How are you?
Good. Yeah, this is one of the best guests that I've heard. Catherine, you're just very, very intelligent, very beautiful person.
Oh, thanks, Ted.
Yeah, what I wanted to say is that I do think that the globalist, if you want to call it that, group, there's a very spiritual aspect to that, and there's something that I noticed, actually because of something that William Cooper said on one of his tapes about September 11th, and this was in 96. There's actually a point about that date where it works out as actually the first day of the new millennium, if you go back to the Coptic calendar, which is actually sort of an intersection between Egyptian and Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So exactly 2,000 years ago from September 11th would have been year one in the Coptic tradition.
Glad you know that.
That brings back the dollar bill and the Egyptian connection. I think these people are very, very spiritual. And I think that the key is they want to control knowledge. They don't want us to have these kinds of technologies that, you know, if you just go up and up and up in what they can do, you know, somebody can tweak the magnetic field of the Earth from their backyard or something.
They're into numerology, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting how they have so many, kind of arcane or occult traditions mixed in with this. And I kind of got this from Hoagland, and then apparently I found out that Hoagland got it from Jordan Maxwell. So
yes.
Very interesting stuff.
Absolutely. Okay, thanks, Ted. Appreciate you being part of the program. Did you ever see my favorite movies? I've mentioned it before. I'll do it again. Eyes Wide Shut?
Oh, yes.
Not one of my favorite movies, not my favorite movie. I mean,
but a very useful movie.
It if you understand the Illuminati, you'll understand the movie. If you don't understand the Illuminati and what their mission is, you have no idea what that movie is.
Yeah.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. It's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Thank you. Hi, this is Bob in San Diego.
Hello, Bob.
Thanks so much for taking my call, and thank you for having Catherine on. And thank you, Catherine, for making me realize I'm not alone in the world.
Oh,
I'm a former SEC attorney from 25 years ago, and about 2 years ago I got involved in another matter, and I found exactly what you found, that they lie. I have statements on records. And when I went to report it to, I said, well, this couldn't be real. I'll report it to the Division of Enforcement. And instead of doing anything, they started making criminal threats against my client.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I was shocked. I mean,
it's like dealing with the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Yeah, it's like you said, I believe in white hats and the black hats, and there's good guys and good will triumph. Yeah. And I'm curious, what did you do in your case? Because I'm sitting here shaking, saying, do I call them up again? Will they come after me this time?
I would really encourage you to send me an email at Catherine@Solari.com, and I can send you some more stuff on dirty tricks. But if you go to my website, there's a section on litigation, and I go into a lot of these issues. If you go to the bottom of the homepage on the right, there's a whole section on litigation and many, many of these issues. But I would caution you to be extremely careful.
What would the Founding Fathers say about all this, Catherine?
Well, I think the Founding Fathers would have said if you ever give up the control of the currency from the U.S. Treasury, this is exactly what will happen.
Well, you know, that's funny because Andre, that guest I was just talking about, also talked about the fact that the Federal Reserve System is what is screwing us up, and that
yes.
we need our monetary system to revert back to government.
George, because I didn't know if all the, you know, things I'd been told about the Federal Reserve were true or not, and so in a couple years ago, I wrote an email or called all the Federal Reserve banks, and I asked two questions: who owns your equity? And the second question was, who manages your databases, and do your private owners or have access to your data?
I bet you didn't get information to either question.
Well, to both questions, they said, that's a private, confidential matter.